I mentioned at the beginning of the service that it seemed fitting to change course for perhaps just one Lord's Day to consider the theme of suffering. I can't remember a time where I've been part of a church that has experienced so many trials all at once, and yet we can trust in our God. He is sovereign. And so I thought it'd be worthwhile looking at Psalm 77 this evening to help us to gain some perspective of what the Lord is doing. In this psalm, we are immediately transported into the mind of a very troubled person. This man, Asaph, is in deep distress, to the point that he even refuses to be comforted. Verse 2, my soul refused to be comforted. And yet a great transformation happens in Asaph. By the end of this psalm, he has gained perspective. His mindset is totally changed from beginning to be in a place of deep distress. He moves to a place of sheer praise of God. How can this be? Asaph, you will see here, has begun interrogating God, asking him extremely difficult questions, making serious complaints to God. And yet by the end, his last question is not an interrogation of God. It is one of praise. Verse 13, who is so great a God as our God? How does he move from there to there? What a transformation. And I believe that we will each benefit this evening from looking at this change of mindset, because you too may have been tempted to ask these kind of questions, particularly at this time, or if not at this time, in times past, or in times to come. We can have doubts. They can be momentary. Just a fleeting doubt that passes as we see a way of God and we ask, what is God doing in this particular circumstance? But it can also be a more long-standing doubt that we have when faced with a very difficult circumstance that continues to linger, as it were. A hard providence has come into our path. We can have questions of God. But I want to say this evening that it's not a good place to remain in. We must not remain with our questions. We must not be like the psalmist who initially refused to be comforted. There is comfort here for us all here this evening. I think it would be beneficial for us all to consider the process that this psalmist went through from being in deep distress to being greatly comforted. It is a process that will take us into realms that we cannot comprehend. Ultimately, we'll be considering the great things of God and his ways far higher than our ways. But it is a process that we must undertake when we are faced with deep distress. So under the title, The Necessity of Meditating on God's Ways, I want to consider three headings. First, we see the complaint to God. Then secondly, the consolation or comfort that the psalmist, and we trust each one of us this evening, gets from God. And then thirdly, the need to consider the ways of God. So first of all, the complaint to God. It is very obvious from this psalm that Asaph is in a really bad place. He has got to a place where, as he says in verse 2, my soul refused to be comforted. How had Asaph got to this place? Well, in verse 2, he mentions that there has been a day of my trouble. He doesn't elaborate what this day of trouble is. But it's a deeply personal one. Do you notice that he calls it a day of my trouble? In all likelihood, it's considering the state of the church at that time, perhaps in captivity. If you know the Psalter, you'll know that Psalms 73 to 83 are the Psalms of Asaph, and he looks at the state of the church at that time and how it's in a bad way. And he perhaps feels it so keenly that he calls it my trouble. But it doesn't say. Perhaps it is just the trouble that Asaph has, that he is harboring privately. But certainly we can tell that it's not a small thing. It's affecting him significantly. It is a day of trouble. What is this root of the trouble? Well, he's got to the point where he's questioning God. He's questioning God. It's not that he keeps quiet in his suffering, but it bubbles over into outright questioning, even interrogation of God. Look at the questions that Asaph asks. Verse 7, will the Lord cast off forever? And will he be favourable no more? Verse 8, has his mercy ceased forever? Has his promise failed forevermore? Verse 9, has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his tender mercies? What questions to ask God? They're striking at the very character of God. He is questioning, are you actually merciful? He's asking, are you really a covenant-keeping God? Look at verse 8. Has his mercy ceased forever? Has his promise failed forevermore? The promises that God had made, he is questioning that. What a question, questions to ask, what interrogations to make of God. But in asking these questions, Asaph is not alone. If you know the Bible, you'll know that several people ask God questions. If you've read the book of Habakkuk recently, you'll know that he asks God questions. The Psalms are full of people asking God questions. And even a few weeks ago, we saw how the disciples in the boats asked the Lord Jesus Christ, do you not care that we are going to drown? And I wonder if you've had similar thoughts. Perhaps you're grieved at the state of the church. I'm not talking about Emmanuel, but generally speaking. Or perhaps you've had difficulty in your own life. And you're perhaps not asking questions with these very words, but the sentiment of these questions are there. You're interrogating God. Why has this happened? You're meant to be merciful. Why has this thing happened? Well, it's important to note that Asaph did not remain asking questions of God. Asaph did not continue to interrogate God. It took a process, but Asaph moved on from his point of despair. And if you're in despair this evening, then you need to go through this same process as well. Importantly, these negative questions from Asaph stop. And the next question he asks after these very serious questions are, who is a great a God is our God? What has happened to Asaph? Why has he, or how has he moved from a position of a troubled mind, deeply troubled, that's affecting his sleep, that's causing him to be so troubled, to such high praise of God? Well, secondly, we see that Asaph is consoled in his distress when he considers the works of God. He is brought from a place of asking multiple questions that doubt God to a rhetorical question which praises God. Verse 13, who is a God as our God? What does he meditate on? He meditates on the works that the Lord did in the past for his people. In the midst of this difficult time here in the present, Asaph meditates on what God did in the past to rescue and to preserve his people. And it is by looking back at what God has done that Asaph is comforted in his present distress. What does he look back and see? Well, he's consoled by the works or wonders of old. Look at verses 10 to 12. And I said, this is my anguish, but I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will also meditate on all your work and talk of your deeds. He remembers the works of the Lord. And notice he doesn't just think about them. He remembers and he meditates on them. I'll come back to that later on. Well, what does he think about in particular? Well, notice in thinking about these great wonders of old that he primarily thinks of the Exodus, that great event where God took his people out of Egypt. And then in this psalm, he also, as well as thinking of the Exodus, thinks about the journey through the Red Sea. And that's no accident. We see in verse 15, in speaking of the Exodus, that great movement of God's people out of Egypt, you have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph, out of Egypt. And then in verse 19, your way was in the sea, your path in the great waters, and your footsteps were not known. So why does the psalmist focus in on those two events? What is so comforting about these things? Well, certainly it is the power of God seen in these works. And you think about it, if he's particularly thinking about the low state of the church, perhaps in captivity, as he thinks about the power of God that is never changing, that perhaps God could do this same thing again and revive his work. Because back in the Exodus, it was surely a demonstration of his power. Verse 14 tells us that. You are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength amongst the people. Think about all those things that happened in Egypt. All those great elements of God's power on display. And then we think about the sea as well. How the sea was parted and the water was kept there by God. This is why Asaph says in verse 13, who is so great a God as our God? Who is so great a God as our God? But it is not simply a demonstration of his great power, these two events, the Exodus and the Red Sea. It is what God is doing in the midst of that demonstration of great power that comforts Asaph ultimately. What I mean by that is that Asaph was comforted when thinking about the Exodus because God brought his people out of Egypt. God was demonstrating in that great power that he was being faithful to his covenant promises. This is what is ultimately going to comfort Asaph in his present distress. Remember at the beginning of Exodus, the book of Exodus now, how the people were suffering so badly under Pharaoh. Do you remember that? And it gets worse and worse. But we read in Exodus chapter 2, verse 24, God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. The reason why the Exodus takes place is because God has been faithful to his promises. He is a covenant-keeping God. The reason why we know that is God had said hundreds of years earlier to Abraham, had actually predicted this, Genesis chapter 15, verse 13, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land," in other words, Egypt, "that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. And also the nation whom I serve, I will judge. Afterward, they shall come out with great possessions." Can you see the significance of this for Asaph? He had previously been doubting the covenant faithfulness of God. Do you remember he said, "Have you forgotten your promise?" Verse 8, "Has his promise failed forevermore?" But notice how Asaph, in thinking of these things, joins the dots. He grants comfort from God's dealings in the past. He recognizing that God does keep his promises, even in the bleakest of times, and that God is a covenant-keeping God. Notice how Asaph puts it after meditating on the events of the Exodus. Verse 15, "You have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and of Joseph." This sentence is rich in covenantal language. You have redeemed your people. And look, what does it say here? The sons of Jacob and Joseph. In Genesis chapter 17, going back to the promise now, 400 years earlier, God had said that he would be a God to you and your descendants after you. And this is a reference to Jacob. You remember the promise was made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And this Jacob is mentioned in Psalm 77. And so in the Exodus, 400 years after that promise has been made, in God's mysterious timing and ways, God is fulfilling his covenant promises to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Just when it looked its bleakest. And so Asaph, as he starts to meditate on the wonders of God in the past, God's covenant faithfulness in the past, he starts to get comforted. Because as it was bleak back then, it is bleak now, and yet God can change things for good and is working out his purposes, God's purposes for his glory and for our good. And that's why, very importantly, I think Asaph has to come to accept the ways in which God fulfills his plans. Asaph has to both come to a position where he trusts God and also trust his ways in which God brings his promises to pass. Because if Asaph did not, then he would continue to be perplexed when looking back at the works of God. The reason why I say that is he could have asked these kind of questions. Why did God wait 400 years to fulfill his covenant promises? Or why did the suffering of the Hebrews increase in Egypt rather than get better? Do you remember that? The sufferings of the Egyptians increased before the promises for the Exodus happened. Or why did they even suffer at all? But Asaph is beginning to comfort himself by trusting his covenant-keeping God and the ways in which his covenant-keeping God works. Asaph has to confess that God's ways are mysterious. They are beyond the capacity, the intellect of him. And that's why we find in the psalm Asaph saying two things about the ways of God. He says in verse 13 that the ways of God are in the sanctuary. Verse 13, your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. And in verse 19, your way was in the sea. What is Asaph saying here? First of all, your way was in the sea, verse 19. Well, I believe that Asaph is saying here that God's ways are sometimes not what we would expect, but ones in which God's glory for himself would be increased, and also that his people would be comforted. Let me unpack that. I'll ask a question to begin. Why else would God allow his people to be hemmed in between the Red Sea and Egypt? Do you remember they've just been taken out of Egypt? And yet Pharaoh changes his mind. And they're there in the desert. You've got the Red Sea there, and the Egyptian army are going to hem them in. Why did God let that happen? Well, he did it for his glory and for the good of his people. What did God do? He parted the Red Sea, and the people went through the waves on dry ground. It was a mysterious path, not one that perhaps the Hebrews would have seen happening, but one in which God made. Your way, it says, was in the sea. It just doesn't make sense. And yet that is the way that God led his people. Why this path? Well, it showed that God could lead his people through these uncharted waters, as it were. And it would also lead to more praise for God. You see, there's always a bigger picture in mind. We can sometimes get focused on our own circumstance. But in Exodus 15, the people singing about these great events of the Lord bringing his people through the sea, said, I will sing of the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The Lord is my strength and song. He has become my salvation. Who is a God like our God? You see, these things would not have been sung if the events of the Red Sea had not taken place. These comforts would not have been experienced if they had not been led through the Red Sea. God's ways are for his glory and for the good of his people. And it's sometimes through the sea, as it were. But then secondly, Asaph also says in verse 13 that your way was in the sanctuary. This is a difficult expression, but I believe it to mean that Asaph is talking about the holiness of God's ways. Holiness in terms of altogether different from the ways of God, and holiness in terms of righteousness. As we think about the ways of God, which are mysterious, we see that God can never be accused of sinning. Mysteriously sinful things happen in this world, and yet God is not in them. But also God is working out his eternal decrees through providence in ways which are beyond our comprehension, holy in that sense, altogether different from our ways. We cannot enter into the mind of God, just as men could not enter into the Holy of Holies. In a different context, his ways are beyond our comprehension. It is true, although God's ways are very public and experienced by each one of us, Asaph has to confess that God's ways are higher than his ways, that they are in the sea and in the sanctuary. Yet, they are for God's glory and for the good of his people. And so Asaph is consoled when he thinks of this truth, even if they are beyond his comprehension. He is comforted by his covenant-keeping God, and he is confident in the ways of God, no matter how perplexing they may be to his finite mind. And so thirdly, to apply these things to ourselves, let us consider God's ways. This is what we are to do when we are in deep distress. We are to consider God and his ways. We can find ourselves in a position where we are tempted to ask God questions, even interrogate him. Why has this happened? Or why has that not happened? Or why has this happened now? Why does the suffering of God's people go on? Or why do the wicked prosper? These are questions that sometimes are not far from the people of God. We cry out and we question his ways. But like the psalmist, he is honest with God. We're not to remain there. We're not to remain questioning God. We are to go through the same process that Asaph went through. We are to consider how great our covenant-keeping God is, and consider that his ways are high and mysterious. His ways are higher than our ways, and yet his ways are always good for his people. If we don't gain this perspective, then we'll never be comforted when difficulties come. We will never have rest. Rather, we are to trust in the decrees of God. As the Westminster Shorter Catechism says, his eternal purpose, according to the counsel of his will, whereby for his own glory he has foreordained whatsoever comes to pass. These are the deep things of God. God has an eternal plan that he is carrying out according to the counsel of his will. It is far beyond our comprehension, and yet it is true. It is truly glorious. Through his providence, he works out his decrees. His most holy, wise, and powerful preserving and governing of all his creatures and all their actions. God is working out all these things for his glory and for the good of his people. But without knowledge of these things, and I dare say meditation of these truths, our faith will be quickly shaken when difficulties come, and we will lose perspective. But by meditating on these great truths, then we will be grounded in the comfort of our sovereign God. So could I encourage you to meditate on the great truths and comforts of God and the promises of God? How easy it is to listen and not take it in. Look at how Asaph seeks to ingrain these truths into his soul. Verse 10 and 11. I will remember the years of those high. Verse 11. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. And verse 12. I will also meditate on all your work. How quickly we can be shaken because we haven't meditated and soaked in the albeit high and wise ways of God. But we are to meditate on these things. This is what we do in our deepest distress. We can be certain that God can be trusted. A very well known verse is Romans 8, verse 28, in which I close, and we know that all things, that is, whether we understand them or not, work together for the good to those who are called according to his promise. This is how we are to be consoled when these deep distresses come upon us, when we consider the works of our sovereign, covenant-keeping God, whose ways are higher than our ways. This is the process that Asaph did, and this is the process that we must do. Let us pray together. Our Father in heaven, we confess that we have to put our hand over our mouths and confess you as the great God working mysteriously and yet truly through your sovereign plan, far above our understanding.